Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to the Queer History Podcast. I still haven't figured out how to work the stats on Podbean or Patreon, so I have no idea how many of you are actually listening. But if you're here, I'm glad to have you. Today's podcast is going to cover the life and legacy of Marsha P. Johnson. We'll be looking over some of the details of her life that are discussed in the Queer History article, but we'll also expand on those details and try to put Marsha's experience as a trans woman of color and her work in the queer community into a historical perspective. We're also going to be playing a game in this podcast. It's called Take a Drink of Water, or the beverage of your choice, every time I say quote or end quote. It gets a little excessive in this podcast, and I'm sorry, but I don't have a way to better handle crediting just yet. But I suppose that'll come in time. But anyway, back to the topic at hand. Who was Marsha P. Johnson? Marsha P. Johnson was born in August of 1945. At age 18, she left home with her high school diploma, a bag of clothes, and $15 in order to go and remake herself in New York City. Marsha lived most of her life after leaving home in poverty. She slept in friends' houses, or in theaters, or under flower shop tables, and spent what little money she could busk on food for herself and for the other residents of Christopher Street. Christopher Street was the street that she worked on, and the street that the Stonewall Inn was and is still located on. It was not uncommon for members of the queer community during this time to live in poverty. Not only were outed individuals often kicked out of their homes, but they were just as often fired from their jobs, or denied financial assistance, or treated unfairly by police. According to interviewees from the documentary How We Got Gay, the queer community was living in a time when queerness was, quote, not just criminalized, but medicalized. That said, the options a person had when coming out as queer were often relegated to imprisonment, either by the police or by a mental facility, or to life-threatening poverty. Marsha was a victim of both unfair treatment and poverty over the course of her life, but her circumstances never changed how she presented herself. In identifying as a trans woman, Marsha, quote, put on what fulfilled her idea of being a woman in terms of dresses and jewelry. She found most of her dresses in thrift stores and worked on them herself in order to make them more fashionable. It was common, according to friends, to see her walking down Christopher Street with flowers or lights in her hair. She was described as commanding of attention and over the top, but Marsha never seemed to want to be any other way. She said herself that she never ever took drag seriously because she didn't have the money to do serious drag. Despite her lack of wealth, or perhaps because of it, there were some members of the queer community who referred to Marsha as Robin Hood and others who called her Saint Marsha. In an interview from the documentary Pay It No Mind, one of Marsha's friends tells a story wherein Marsha took the last $2 that the two of them had and used them to buy a pack of cookies from the corner store. Then, Marsha walked down Christopher Street and handed the cookies out to the other impoverished queens until the pack was empty, without eating any herself. Marsha says, in a subsequent interview, that she gave the cookies away because she understood what it was like to be hungry, and that a cookie was sometimes all it took to brighten someone's day. Her generosity and empathy were what made Marsha so well loved by some in her community. It is this trait that future employer Jimmy Chimecha used to identify Marsha as a person. Not only was she generous with money, he claimed, but she was generous with her spirit. Marsha's kindness, however, did not deify her to everyone. She was prevented from going into certain bars in New York City because of how she dressed, and was separated from certain groups of drag queens because of her identity. This transphobia within the queer community comes as no surprise, unfortunately, but it would haunt Marsha throughout her life and even into the years after. Marsha fought against this transphobia and erasure of identity as a queer rights activist throughout her life, but she was also a sex worker. She worked widely in order to make what money she could, but it was a dangerous job. The laws in place against same-sex copulation in New York City limited the nature of Marsha's encounters. They most often took place in public locations, thus presenting both partners with risks sanitary and legal in nature. Marsha never stopped being a sex worker. But in the early 70s, she began working with a drag group called the Hot Peaches, founded by friend Jimmy Chimecha. Drag queens with the Hot Peaches sang, recited poetry, and performed live on stage to a rambunctious and cheerful crowd. Marsha was beloved in this setting, despite her debatable singing ability. I wanted to include a soundbite of a poem she performed, entitled You Gotta Have Soul, but I don't really want to risk getting sued because I don't have the money for that. I opted out of reading the poem to you as well because Marcia performs it with such a presence that I felt my rendition of it wouldn't do it justice. Instead, I've included a link to the YouTube video of Marcia's performance in the description on the Queer History Podcast Patreon site. All of this information about Marcia, from a multitude of sources, paints a broad picture of the person Marcia was, while allowing the important details to stand out. She was impoverished, yes, but she had an indomitable spirit. She was kind and beloved, reviled by some, but resilient. She lived a bold life at great personal risk, and that boldness is what led to her essential involvement with the progress of the queer community. It is with this image in mind that we turn our attention to the Stonewall Inn and the Stonewall riots. Laura Mills, in the Queer History article, describes the night of the riots as such. On June 28, 1969, police raided the Stonewall Inn without warning the staff. The Stonewall Inn was a gay bar and had regular raids, so neither the patrons nor the staff were unused to this. That night, as the police attempted to arrest the people in the bar, however, something shifted. The patrons in the bar started fighting back. It was one of the first violent protests in American LGBT+ history, and it was a turning point in the fight for queer rights. There's debate as to what Marcia's involvement in the riots consisted of. Some stories say she threw the first brick of the riot, but the Pay It No Mind documentary states that she threw a shot glass into a mirror. The documentary describes this moment of rebellion as the shot glass heard around the world. But regardless of whether it was a brick or a shot glass, Marcia was heavily involved in the Stonewall riots. Her influence, and the influence of the riots, was felt internationally. In the documentary How We Got Gay, the development of, quote, gay ghettos in New York City and in Canada is credited to the Stonewall riots. The first Pride March in New York City took place 1 year to the day after the Stonewall riots, and the first Canadian Pride took place 1 year after that, according to the documentary. By enacting the, quote, first violent protest in American LGBT+ history, the queer community at Stonewall sparked a revolution that is still raging on today. And yet, Marsha P. Johnson's name has faded with time. As Mills points out in the Queer History article, the movie adaptation of Stonewall that came out in 2015 refused to recognize Marsha as a key member of the riots, and instead, quote, created the cisgender, white, gay, male character named Danny Winters and made the film deal with his struggles. Mills goes on to state that, quote, this was not the first time Marsha P. Johnson had been pushed out of the way in favor of letting white, cisgender men take the stage of the LGBT+ movement. Even while Marsha was still alive, members of the queer community wanted to bar her and other transgender women from walking in the New York Pride parades. In 1978, these individuals, quote unquote, succeeded, and neither transgender individuals nor drag queens could walk in the Pride parade. In response, Marcia and her fellow trans rights activist Sylvia Rivera fought back and marched along with other trans individuals and drag queens in the front of the parade, not participating technically, but still being present, and furthermore being the first image to be associated with the 1978 Pride. Afterward, the motion to ban trans individuals from Pride was repealed. It wasn't until 1980, however, that Marcia was allowed to ride in the parade's Stonewall car along with her fellow rioters, and that she was recognized by the queer community as one of the key figures in the queer rights movement. We could ask why this was the case, but it seems like a debate not worth having. Transphobia and homophobia within the queer community existed and still exist today, despite what some people would prefer to think. It surprises me still some days, even though I'm far from perfect, I'm still learning my way around the queer community, and as a cis woman, I have no place speaking about the trans experience. I can remember, though, walking to one of my classes one day and entering into this conversation that was ripe with biphobia. I'll tell that story another time, but suffice to say, the misinformation and mistrust directed towards supposedly lesser-known parts of the community still shocks me, and it saddens me deeply. However, there are some places wherein these identities are celebrated. Marsha P. Johnson, specifically, stands not only as one of the great queer revolutionaries of the 20th century, but also as a woman whose well-wishers tried to remember her as the movement grew. The Pay It No Mind documentary stands as a representation of this, but so does STAR, Marsha's organization to assist homeless transgender youth. Anthony and the Johnsons also produced a song after Marsha's death, entitled River of Sorrow, that mourns Marsha but also celebrates the vivacious nature of her life. I want to end this podcast with a poem written by Quo Lee Driscoll that celebrates Marsha's legacy. Its title is For Marsha P. Pay It No Mind Johnson, and it reads as follows. Each act of war is whispered from queen to queen, held like a lost child, then released into the water below. Names float into rivers, gentle blooms of African violets. I will be the one that dangles from the side but does not let go. The police insisted you leapt into the Hudson, driftwood body in sequin lace, rhinestone beads that pull us to the bottom. No serious investigation, just another dead queen. I am the one who sings Billie Holiday as a prayer song to you, Marsha P. We all choke on splintered bones, dismembered screams, the knowledge that each death is our own. I pour libations of dove's blood, leave offerings of yam and corn to call back all of our lost spirits. Marsha P., your face glitters with Ashanti gold as you sashay across the moonscape in a ruby chariot ablaze. Sister, you drag us behind you. We are gathering on the bridge between survival and despair. I will be the one wearing gardenias in my hair, thinking about how we all go back to the water, thinking about the night you did not jump. I will make voodoo dolls of the police and other thugs, walk to the edge, watch the river rise to meet them. I will be the one with the rattlesnake that binds my left arm, and in my right hand I will carry a wooden hatchet to cut away at the silence of your murder. Each of us go on, pretend to pay it no mind, bite down hard on the steel of despair. We will be the ones that gnaw off our own legs rather than let them win. We will be the ones mourning the death of yet another queen. Girl, I will put your photo on my ancestral altar to remember all of us who never jumped. Miss Johnson, your meaning sparkle like stars dappled across the piers of the Hudson River. Gathered on the bridge, we resist the water. Thank you for listening, everyone. Next week we'll cover Kanumatep and Nyakhnum from Egypt, which means I have 7 days to figure out how to generally manage those names in a sentence. Thank you again for listening this week, and we look forward to bringing you more queer history in the days to come.